David Crowe. Thank you for tuning in to episode 202 of my weekly radio show, The Infectious Myth. Email me at david.crowe@theinfectiousmyth.com, that's Crowe with an E. Join the discussion and like us at facebook.com/theinfectiousmyth. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at infectiousmyth. Listen Tuesdays at 2 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time on prn.fm or subscribe to the podcast. You can listen to any of the last five episodes over the phone by dialing the U.S. number 701-719-0990. Remember, I don't know you're a listener until I hear from you. If you send me a message letting me know how you stay in touch with the show and what you like about it, if you include your mailing address, I will send you a little thank you gift, which will be one of the bookmarks I make by hand using my own photographs. If you'd like to sponsor the show, you can make a one-time donation via PayPal using the email david.crowe@theinfectiousmyth.com or monthly donations at patreon.com/infectiousmyth. If you'd like me to speak at a meeting of an organization you're a member of, I'd be happy to discuss this with you. I appreciate you commenting and suggesting guests. I appreciate your financial support as well. Thanks for listening and for recommending this show to your friends. I've been interested in the tension between feminists and transgender women, i.e. biological men living as women, for some time. I've had difficulty getting anyone to go on the record, but Megan Murphy, a self-described left-leaning feminist, kindly agreed, just after being banned on Twitter for saying that men are not women. Megan Murphy is a freelance writer and journalist, writing and podcasting about feminism since 2010. She's published widely in such media as Vice, Al Jazeera, The Globe and Mail, Truth Dig, The New Statesman, etc. She has a master's degree from the Department of Gender, Sexuality, and Women's Studies at Simon Fraser University in Vancouver, and that was in 2012, and she lives in Vancouver, BC, with her dog. She's recently been censored a couple times by Twitter, and that's one of the things we'll talk about today. In fact, if I heard it right, and you'll soon correct me, I think she's been kicked off Twitter entirely. So welcome to the show, Megan.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so before we get started, I would just like to say that I've contacted several transgender women for their perspective on this issue, biological men living as women. I'm interested in the tension between feminists and trans women. So trans women, biological men who live as women, and sometimes have had chemical or physical body modifications. So the new statement is trans women are women, and women who object to that are labeled as TERFs, trans-exclusive radical feminists. You've said trans women are men, so do you want to talk about this conflict?
I feel like there's nothing wrong with acknowledging a person's biological sex, even if they feel that the gender role imposed on them due to that biological sex doesn't feel right for them. And in fact, I think that's a good thing and a normal thing to feel like those gender roles don't fit, because they don't really fit for anyone. You know, nobody is a stereotype. People have personalities, people are complex. No man, I don't think, really completely and wholly fits into this masculinity box, and no woman completely and wholly fits into this femininity box. You know, people are more complicated than that.
Right.
What I find confusing and really, you know, unnecessary is this push to say that, you know, because you don't relate to these gender stereotypes or you don't feel comfortable with them, that means that you are literally the opposite sex. I mean, it's not possible for a person to change sex. It's possible for a person to get cosmetic surgery and to go on hormones, but that doesn't literally change a person's sex. And I'm not sure what the purpose is in pushing for this idea that that is possible, or that it's possible to somehow, you know, have a male body but really be a woman on the inside. I don't understand what that means. No one's been really able to explain to me what that means when I ask. And in fact, I got locked out of Twitter for asking that question.
Yeah, I mean, I think there were two tweets which I read. One of them was very, I think you said trans women are men. That's about it.
Yeah, I said men aren't women, and it was part of a conversation I was having with somebody who was angry at me about my views, and I was trying to clarify what it was they were angry about, because usually when people kind of come at me online and call me transphobic or call me hateful or tell me that my views are disgusting, I'll ask them very politely. Like I try to engage with lots of people online, and I feel like I try to engage pretty reasonably without vitriol. But I'll ask, you know, what is it specifically about my views that you disagree with? What is it about my argument that you find troubling? And often people won't respond. They'll just respond with vitriol, or they'll block me or something like that. But so that, you know, I was responding to someone who was, I felt, misrepresenting or misunderstanding my arguments. And I said, no, what I'm saying is that men aren't women. You know, that's not, well, they're not the same.
I also have had difficulty getting a conversation started. I've contacted a few people because I would genuinely like to get their perspective. And often what trans people have said online is they'll say, well, there's a difference between gender and sex. But then if you state, okay, well, your sex is still male, even though you feel your gender is female, even that seems to be crossing the line nowadays. It's like you are literally a woman if you say so.
Yeah, it's so strange because I mean, and of course, feminists over decades have been arguing that gender and sex are not the same thing. This is what I say over and over online, and I've clarified my argument so many times over, and so of course it becomes really frustrating when people continue to misrepresent it. But you know, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying sex is one thing. Sex is just your body. It's just what you're born with. You can't be born in the wrong body. You can be born with a body that you don't like or you don't feel comfortable with, but unfortunately we're pretty much stuck with our bodies. And you know, right. But your gender, your feelings about gender and gender roles, that's a separate thing. You know, gender is a social role that's imposed on people. It's not, from my perspective, something that's internal or necessarily innate. And transgender or trans activists will say over and over and over again, sex and gender aren't the same, but yet they conflate these terms constantly in a way that almost seems intentional. It's so, you know, I've started to feel like, I'm not like a conspiracy theorist, but I've started to feel like they're purposely trying to make this an impossible conversation to have by confusing people to the point that they can't engage, and ensuring that words no longer mean anything so that we can't have a coherent arguments or conversations about it.
One thing they seem to want is they want to preserve the binary notion of sex. Like until maybe a year ago, I was hearing a lot of people saying, I need a new pronoun, which implies that you don't feel comfortable as either a man or a woman. Like you may be in a man's body, but you feel more like a woman. And so you want to use a different pronoun. But in now we're saying, okay, there's only two pronouns, he and she, and you can switch between them, but you can't be in between. Yep, what you said at the beginning is, like, most men have a feminine side and, you know, to varying degrees, and women also have, stereotypical masculine traits, some more than others. Some are very, you know, sports-like, do things that aren't considered sort of traditional female things, but now we're trying to put people into two boxes, right? Male or female.
The other issue that I have with this, you know, with gender identity ideology is this idea that, you know, like I really think that what the ideology does is reinforce these gender roles that trans activists claim they're trying to destroy. So instead of saying, you know, I'm a man who relates to femininity, or, you know, doesn't appear to be or doesn't behave like a stereotypical man, they're saying, well, because I don't behave like a stereotypical man, or because I don't feel like a stereotypical man, because I don't relate to masculinity, I must actually be a woman, which I feel is kind of sexist, because I don't think that women are defined by stereotypes. I don't think that women are defined by femininity. I think the only thing that defines a woman is the fact that she has a female body, not whether or not she behaves passively, or whether or not she's nurturing, or whether or not she likes makeup or has long hair or wears high heels. You know what
right.
I mean?
Women have, over the past century, I guess, won the ability to do things that were traditionally masculine. They can work in almost any job. They can wear clothes, you know, like pants that were, when I was in high school, they were forbidden for girls. You know, I mean, there's a lot of changes that have been made where women can express their personality either is very traditionally feminist or feminine, not feminist, or more sporty, you know, wearing clothes that were traditionally male, instead of trying to fit within the box of I'm a woman, so I have to wear a dress and do my hair and all that kind of stuff.
Right, exactly. I mean, this is exactly what I keep trying to get at with all these questions that I'm told are so offensive and hateful, that it's like, well, if a trans woman is literally a woman, then what's trans? You know, what does that mean? You know, what's a trans woman? A trans, like, if you say I'm a trans woman or this person is a trans woman, you're acknowledging that you were born with a male body. But yet at the same time, that's what's being denied. I was never a man. I've always really been a woman. Now I just, you know, like, am I identifying myself as I truly am? And no one's permitted even to acknowledge that this person was in the past a male. I mean, I think still male, but do you know what I mean? Like, there's this
yes.
thing around dead naming now where you're
right.
Not
I was just going to bring that up. Yes.
That a so-called trans woman was previously male.
Right. So dead naming is using the male, the original name, the male name for somebody who calls themselves a trans woman and has a female name. And that can get you kicked off Twitter as well, I believe.
Yeah, so Twitter recently included or added misgendering and dead naming into their terms of service, saying that, you know, users can no longer do these things. Misgendering means when you refer to somebody who identifies as a woman as he, or, you know, someone who identifies as a man as she. So, you know, you're referring to their sex rather than their preferred gender identity. And I think, I mean, the dead naming thing, I think is really, really sketchy and really dangerous, because I think that, of course, the danger is, and to be honest, you know, I think that this is the purpose of this ban against dead naming in many ways, is to ensure that, you know, male perpetrators of violence can erase their history. So they can erase their history from the internet, change their name, and demand that nobody refer to their pasts as men and to their past names. So, you know, for example, you know, there's this man in Vancouver who's been referred to as JY by the media. I'm not sure why the media is protecting his anonymity, but they are. And he's been going around threatening to sue anybody who uses his name, his male name, despite the fact that he still uses his male name on Twitter, or did as up until recently. I don't know if he's changed it permanently, but you know, that I was banned from Twitter finally for supposedly misgendering this guy because I referred to him as he instead of she. And, you know, nowhere on the internet does it indicate that he's started living as a woman. And, you know, like I said, male name is still, he's still using his male name, but he has a really sketchy past. And people had found comments of his that were pedophilic in nature. So he's clearly trying to erase this and to ensure no one can discuss this anymore. And it's like quite scary from my perspective.
When people first talked about changing sex recorded on a birth certificate, I mean, at first it was basically to erase the sex by putting an X. But now people are changing male to female and vice versa. Nobody thought it would have any, well, maybe some people did, but it seemed like most people didn't think there'd be any adverse consequences. I mean, in a humorous event, a man in Alberta changed his birth certificate to female to get lower driver's insurance rates. And that was kind of funny. But more seriously, there's a man, I think in Vancouver, who has been going around asking women to give him a Brazilian wax. Not something I'm terribly familiar with, but I believe it's to remove all the pubic hair. And the women who do it only for women. But he is saying, I'm a woman, you have to do it or I'll sue you.
Right. So this is this JY person that
the
I was
same with. Person.
Yeah. So so his identity was discovered by a blogger. Mm-hmm. And it was discovered that he has this long history of doing this to businesses. So ordering food from a restaurant and then complaining that there was something wrong with the food and then trying to sort of extort money out of whatever business it is. He's done it to a number of businesses. It's clearly how he makes money. So in this case, he decided to do it with these aestheticians and to use this new trans trend as a means to do that. So he was calling up aestheticians in the Vancouver area asking for Brazilian bikini wax. And then when the aestheticians told him, who are all female, they only provided the service for women, he claimed discrimination on account that he was supposedly really a woman. And even though it's very clear that he was a man, and it's really disturbing that he's trying to, you know, bully women into touching his genitals when they feel uncomfortable doing so. And he took 16 women to BC Human Rights Court and tried to, you know, get thousands of dollars from these women who are not wealthy women. You know, you don't make a ton of money working at a beauty salon. And he dropped the case because this information. Because the defense lawyers found information around these pedophilic comments. So it turned out he was a predator. He didn't want this information getting out to the media, so he dropped the case. But this blogger found out about the information anyway, posted it online. I tweeted a link to this evidence saying, is it true that JY is actually, and I used his name, which was the blogger had uncovered. And then I saw a screenshot that somebody else had posted online. It wasn't my screenshot, and linked to that screenshot, which was evidence that it was indeed him. It was a screenshot of him leaving a Yelp review under his name, his male name, saying, you know, so-and-so did a great job on my wax. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, it's him. And that's what Twitter banned me for.
Well, I was just going to say, I wonder what would have happened if a woman had agreed to do this. If he would have decided that he actually didn't want it, like if it was all just a scam to get money.
Yeah, it may have just been a scam, or yeah, it was either trying to pressure women into doing something that made them feel uncomfortable, or I mean, both, because I'm sure that he knew calling around to these aestheticians that most would decline. And I mean, even if it wasn't about, you know, making women feel uncomfortable, because of course, you know, they would feel uncomfortable touching a man's penis. That's not what they signed up for when they working to give bikini waxes. It's a different, supposedly, I just learned this online. I don't really know anything about it personally. Supposedly it's, you know, you need a different kind of wax. Like it's a different service. It's not the same process when you're waxing male genitals versus when you're giving a bikini wax, and they weren't set up to offer that kind of service either way.
Right. So, I mean, I was thinking about this. In the past maybe 50 years, we've gone from having a lot of male-only spaces, such as private clubs, and I don't think there's an exact parallel with women-only spaces, but what's your perception about why do women need women-only spaces or women-only services? Why is that important to maintain?
Yeah, I mean, so I don't think that every space needs to be sex segregated, obviously. Mm-hmm. I think that there's some particular spaces that do need to be sex segregated. And, you know, unfortunately, for the most part, the reasons behind that are that, you know, women have been historically subject to male violence. It doesn't mean that all men are predators, but it means that when women are subjected to sexual assault, domestic abuse, things like that, you know, things like stalking, peeping toms, as they're called, these are all men who are doing this. And so in spaces where women are particularly vulnerable, it's important to do our best to keep men out. So places like change rooms, places like bathrooms, places like transition houses. So, you know, rape crisis shelters, like places where women are going to escape male violence. So transition houses in particular, women are coming because they've been subject to really horrible violence, and they deserve a space where they aren't going to be triggered and feeling unsafe because there's a man around and they've just been beaten up by a man.
Right. And this is actually a real case, right? There was a women's shelter that took in a trans woman.
Right. Well, yeah, took in a man who identifies as a woman. There was a space in Fresno for homeless women, and they allowed a man in because he claimed to be a woman, and people, you know, can't say no anymore because they'll be sued or taken to court or accused of a hate crime. He was sexually harassing the women and gawking at the women and doing really inappropriate things in the showers. So the women are suing the home that they were staying at. I believe it's just a temporary home for homeless women. There was also a case in Toronto with a woman named Christy Hanna, who was at a recovery house. So it's a house for recovering addicts, mm-hmm. for single women. And they allowed a man in and forced her to share a room with the man. And she's been sexually assaulted many times. She's in recovery. You know, she's dealing with enough already. She was really triggered, really stressed out. She has insomnia already, so she already has trouble sleeping. But she tried staying there for 2 nights, and she felt so scared and uncomfortable and triggered that she had to leave and go stay at her sister's house. You know, she has to leave this space, and the man gets to stay. It's, you know, it's crazy.
It's been so traditional that spaces where women are naked, say as a change room in a swimming pool or something like that, or where women are sleeping in sort of a public space, that they would be sex segregated. And it's when a woman is raped, it's the genitals that are doing the raping, right?
Yeah.
And also, many of these trans women are still attracted to women. Some are calling themselves lesbians. I mean, can you talk about that?
Yeah, you're right. So a lot of these men who transition a lot of these men, the problem is that no one will even define what transgender is or what it means to be a trans woman, because it's not dependent on any kind of physical transition. You know, some so-called trans women have had surgery and are on hormones and who've, you know, gotten breast implants and gotten rid of their penises. But a lot of them just still kind of look exactly as they did when they were identifying as male, but, you know, maybe now they're wearing makeup or a dress or something, or maybe even not. In some cases, they just look like a regular old dude. So, and like you say, a lot of them are heterosexual. So now when they claim to be women, they're claiming to be lesbians and demanding that lesbians who are only attracted to women date them and sleep with them because they identify as women, and they accuse these lesbians of being bigoted when they don't want to. You know, it's such awful bullying.
One of the things that I've seen said many times is that words are violence. And for example, the statement like trans women are men, that is violence. But there's actually several examples of men living as women, trans women, exhibiting violence. Can you talk about the genderettes in San Francisco, for example? It's one example.
Yeah. I mean, the irony that of, you know, trans activists accusing people who say that trans women are male, or for asking questions like, what is a trans woman? What does transgender mean? You know, like, how can you change sex? All these questions that I've been asking. The irony of accusing these people of violence is that trans activists literally are threatening violence and in some cases perpetrating violence. So I have been threatened with really graphic violence online on Twitter countless times. I cannot count the amount of times that people have told me to choke, to die, to drink bleach, who've sent me rape threats, who said that I should be raped with a serrated knife, these kinds of things. And that Twitter has never done anything about these overtly violent threats. And yet they locked down my account and banned me simply for stating facts. Men aren't women. Simply for stating facts about what trans activists have been doing, or for asking these questions. You know, what's the difference between a trans woman and a man? What's a trans woman? And, you know, the degenderettes are this trans activist group who have started showing up at, you know, LGBT events and at events like the Women's March. So they've been showing up at like the Pride Parade, the Women's March, the Dyke March, things like that. And they show up with baseball bats and axes and bloodied shirts saying punch TERFs. So the word TERFs is an acronym for trans exclusionary radical feminist. It's a slur. It's often attached to violent threats. So most of these violent threats that I've gotten online have been attached to the word TERF. So it's like die, TERF, C word, that kind of thing. The degenderettes are, you know, literally threatening women with violence, women who they deem TERFs, and showing up with these weapons. These baseball bats are sometimes covered in barbed wire. You know, it's really scary. And these are men holding these baseball bats and these axes, but men who claim to be women. So progressives just accept it. We're supposed to accept these people as women. It's not really a threat. You know, apparently they're allowed to do whatever they want, including threaten women with violence. And it's all good because we have been forced to adopt this narrative that trans people are somehow the most marginalized people on the planet.
Well, I'm not sure that this new trend represents even all transgender people. Like, I saw somebody on Twitter named Mars who wrote, "I am a transsexual man. It's how I present to the world, but does not erase the fact that I'm a biological female. If someone wants to call me out as female, so what? I need not give them my attention, nor will it erase the fact that I'm a transsexual man." I've actually read several transgender authors who've said, "No, I'm not fully a man. I'm not fully a woman." But it seems like the people getting the airtime are those who have the most extreme views.
Right. And so, to be clear, when I say trans activists, I'm not necessarily referring to even transgender people, but certainly not to all transgender people. Because you're right. I think that most people who identify as transsexual or transgender, whatever in the world, are not participating in this kind of behavior. I think that there's a few people who are really loud and who dominate discourse and are sort of representing the so-called trans community in this way. But when I say trans activists, I'm talking about people who push transgender ideology, gender identity ideology, this idea that you can really be a woman on the inside, even though you have a male body, the idea that you can change sex, the idea that trans women are literally female, et cetera. Yeah, there's a lot of, they often identify themselves as transsexual, as you mentioned, and not transgender, but I've gotten tons of emails from people who identify as transsexual who say that they agree with me and they're appalled at the treatment of me by trans activists. There's tons of transsexual people who online who've tried to speak out about this and say, you know, I have not literally changed sex. This is just how I feel comfortable living my life. I just want to feel comfortable. Well, I just want to dress how I want to dress. I want to look how I want to look, which is fine. Those people, of course, should be accepted and not harassed and not discriminated against. I mean, nobody should be harassed and discriminated against. But, I mean, they're not pushing this, like, strange, incoherent narrative and bullying and threatening people who don't go along with it.
But it is – they have grasped control of the progressive movement. Like, you have an event coming up at the – Vancouver Public Library. I just read about this.
Right.
And there was a lot of pressure for the library to cancel it, but they said they wouldn't cancel it, but they made a statement which criticized you in numerous ways. They said, the library does not agree with the views of the Feminist Current, which is your website and organization. Megan Murphy's opinions are concerning, an organization whose perspectives we disagree with. They didn't actually say exactly what it was that they had a problem with, but they did say that we want to ensure our locations are welcoming and safe for all patrons, including trans, gender variant, and two-spirit individuals. So it was kind of like a passive-aggressive non-censorship. But it indicated to me that people that run libraries would be probably more tending towards the progressive side of the spectrum, and yet they're completely siding with this viewpoint.
Yeah, I mean, their statement was, I'm glad that they didn't cancel the booking. I think it would have been incredibly hypocritical, certainly not justified to cancel the booking, because libraries, public libraries, are intended to defend free speech speech and to support diverse viewpoints. I do think it would have been difficult for the library to issue a statement that was more supportive of me because they would have been attacked even further, and these people are relentless and harsh and scary. At the same time, you know, people have to stop being so cowardly and disingenuous. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody seems to be able to actually address what I'm really saying. The people who are publicly critical of me have never fairly represented and engaged with my arguments and with what I'm really saying. They either make things up or they just twist my arguments around so that they can knock down their straw man that they've created. I mean,
I could have rewritten the press release for the library to say something like, the library does not endorse the views of the Feminist Current or Megan Murphy's. This is just a rental, right? Right. Be neutral. You know, they went out of their way to disagree with you, but saying we're going to respect the booking anyway because we endorse free speech. They didn't have to go as far the other way as they did, I don't think.
No, I mean, the Vancouver Public Library has fully accepted and embraced gender identity ideology. So it's unsurprising that they would take that position. But yeah, you're right. They didn't have to attack me and smear me in the process of, you know, saying we're going to keep the booking.
Yeah, I think it was more cowardly than coming right out and attacking you. It was, as I said, kind of passive aggressive. I've read several times that some people blame feminists for gender being a social construct. There's a lot of attention now to, are there enough women in STEM, for example? Are you of the opinion that in the work environment, gender is irrelevant or sex is irrelevant? So, for example, that if all was equal, the number of computer programmers would equalize male and female over time? Or do you feel that biological sex differences may actually result in some differences in, say, career choices or lifestyle choices?
It's possible that biological sex may play a role in career choices. I, in my feminist work, have really not focused on this representation issue or this equality issue. I don't think that the most important thing is exactly equal representation in all fields, in all areas. I think that in areas where women have been stereotypically or historically underrepresented, that women should be encouraged to enter into these fields, and that we should try harder to, you know, represent women better in those areas. You know, for example, in politics, you know, there's a long history of women being excluded from politics. Women, you know, weren't even allowed to vote for some time, never, you know, run as politicians. So I do think that it's important. And because, you know, the politicians are the ones who are making decisions and creating legislation. So it is important that women are represented and women's views are represented. But, you know, I think that it has to be equal across the board in every single field. I don't think that that's, you know, I don't think that's the main problem here. I don't think that when we're talking about fighting patriarchy, I'm mainly talking about fighting male violence, you know, challenging sexist gender roles, challenging male dominance, challenging male entitlement to sex, things like sexual assault, and pornification and objectification. But, you know, whether or not women are represented equally in certain fields is not my highest priority.
Okay. I mean, I do agree with you that in politics, it's more important, like if computer programmers never equalize in terms of gender, but given that the people who make the laws that should represent us, it would make sense that they would represent the sexes and also represent, you know, racial groupings, not exactly, but much better than it does today with, right, in many cases, a white male government. It's changing, but not that fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when we're talking about positions of power, I do think that it's important that, you know, women are represented and people of color are represented, because we're talking about, again, people are making decisions about society and legislation and things that affect the population. So, of course, the population should be represented in terms of that decision right. process.
And one thing I should have said earlier when I was talking about male-only spaces, I mean, those were often spaces of power. Like the golf club was where you went to do business deals. And so if women were excluded, that excluded them from that space. And I remember when years ago now, probably 20, 30 years ago, the president of IBM was a woman, and they sponsored a big golf tournament at a male-only golf club, which caused a lot of grief. But I think it started kind of the process of, desegregating golf clubs. Not that right. I care, but...
Yeah, I mean, the male-only spaces have traditionally not been spaces where, you know, they're trying to protect vulnerable males from female predators. So... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess
there's spaces for men so that men can women out and sort of maintain their business connections or their powerful positions. And, in the past, there didn't used to be public washrooms for women because women weren't supposed to be out in public. They were supposed to be in the home.
Right.
Doing domestic chores and raising children, but it also meant that women couldn't really participate in public spaces because there were no washrooms. I mean, women, there's this long history of women being kept out of certain spaces that were, you know, like I said, politics, the workplace, and public spaces in general, specifically to ensure that women remained subordinate and silent and couldn't have any influence or independence in the right. large society.
I learned recently that in the British Parliament, there's two Masonic lodges, which have a huge impact on how you gain like committee chairmanships and things like that. And those are male only, which seemed incredibly archaic. But that kind of stuff, I guess, just goes on more behind the scenes than it used to.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, there was some positive coverage of you in the Federalist. I don't know if that's associated with the Federalist Society. I kind of assume it is, but it certainly has the same politics, which is very conservative U.S., very conservative right-wing politics. What do you think of this irony where you have conservatives who are opposed to this trans women equals women agenda, and you describe yourself as a left-wing feminist?
Yeah, I mean, it's been really interesting because I've gotten so many emails in support. I mean, from all kinds of people, you know, obviously I've gotten lots of supportive emails from feminists and leftists, but I've also gotten a lot of emails and I have not received one negative email. I've not received one piece of hate mail, just like dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of emails in support. So I think that's interesting. But, yeah, I've gotten all these emails from these very nice men and women in the U.S. or in Canada who identify as, who are like Republican, you know, who are right wing, who are maybe Christian. And I've always been like this socialist atheist.
Like, right.
And they're like, I don't agree with anything that you say, but I support you. You know, like. They'll be like, you know, I'm pro-life and I don't think that we would agree on anything in terms of capitalism. But right. I can't believe what they're doing to you. I support your free speech. I'm sending you a donation. Keep going. I would be proud to call you my daughter. And they're so sweet.
Sweet.
You know, I find it interesting. And yeah, I mean, the right-wing media has really covered what's happened to me a lot more so than mainstream or liberal or leftist media. And I think partly that's because the right is opposed to transgender ideology and see it as incoherent and potentially harmful to women. But I think the other side of it is that the mainstream / liberal and left media is scared to cover this issue because if they even talk to me, they'll be attacked as transphobic, never mind if they treat me fairly. What I've also learned in all of this, that as far as like what we call the right, and, you know, I count myself among this as people who've just sort of blanketed right-wing people as all the same and all kind of bad. there's actually a lot of diversity in terms of what the people that we label the right. A lot of people on the right think that Trump is awful. Some people right. support Trump. You know, a lot of people on the right are, you know, some might be racist and a lot of them are anti-racist. A lot of them are really supportive of radical feminism, oddly. And then yet at the same time, we'll have other right-wing views. And I think that it's sort of been unfair. I feel regretful that I've blanketed all right-wing people in the same way. And a lot of these people that I've talked to, I think I've had really interesting conversations with and found them to be really nice, caring, ethical people who just have yes. a totally different political ideology than I do.
I think
some of them are terrible. There are right-wing media who are much worse in terms of issues like like immigration and things like that. But
right, I think there's a tendency to see the right wing as like the U.S. Republican Party and their imitators in Canada. People like Maxime Bernier and Jason Kenney in Alberta, people like that, who are trying to emulate the Republican Party, which sort of has this narrow, extreme view. And even, you know, libertarians who are often maybe pro-choice, they're anti-war. Those people have views that are quite diverse from this sort of corporate Republican who has these extreme views on everything.
Totally. Yeah. And I just think that it's the left has sort of treated the right in an unfair way. And I think that the left has been able to do that by refusing to engage with integrity. And I think that's what the left is also doing to me. And the left has done that to me for a long time, not just over this trans issue, but over the issue of prostitution, for example. You know, most of my work in terms of feminist current and in terms of my journalism has been in opposition to male violence against women and it has been critical of the sex industry, prostitution and pornography, and has been critical of objectification and things like that, sexual exploitation. And so my views on prostitution have the left in Canada, in large part, not all of them, of course, but have really tried to smear me and vilify me and attack me over my criticisms of prostitution. And, you know, now there's this. And in both of those cases, my views have always been treated unfairly and I've always been misrepresented and they've never engaged with what I'm saying with integrity. Not treated my views fairly on prostitution. So they've accused me of, you know, hating prostituted women. And meanwhile, I'm working alongside all these women who've been in prostitution, you know, on the downtown east side of Vancouver, who've exited the trade, you know, struggled to exit the trade, struggled with all sorts right. of, you know, PTSD, trauma, et cetera, and are now activists fighting to criminalize men who exploit women in prostitution. We've all fought to decriminalize prostituted women because we see them as victims of exploitation. And we don't want to criminalize women who are in prostitution just because they have no other choice, because they're poor, or because they right. were forced into prostitution when they're kids or whatever.
I think drugs has a big... one way to get irretrievably poor in Canada is to get trapped into drugs. And for a woman, prostitution is a way to survive.
Well, yeah, and a lot of women in prostitution are dealing with a lot of trauma and need to take drugs in order to self-medicate also, right? But yeah, addiction is a big factor as well, for sure. And so instead of engaging with my critiques of this system, they just accuse me of hate and accuse all women who are critical of prostitution. And they've done the same thing with this transgender issue. They're not engaging with what I'm saying. They're just accusing me of hate. And, you know, this is... big problem on the left. It's like the left just they take up these positions and anyone who disagrees with them is automatically a bigot. And it's not only lazy, but it's like, where are you going to get with these conversations? We're not even having the conversations. They're shutting down all these conversations.
Right. My opinion is that it's complicated. For example, you cannot, I believe you can't eliminate sex work because the demand for it is so high that you could, just like drugs or alcohol, you could never make it go away. But I also believe that a lot of women get into sex work because of their economic vulnerability or other types of vulnerability, not out of real choice. But I also think there are some women, like I interviewed a woman, Andrea Warehoon from Toronto, who was a sex worker for 2 years and said that she enjoyed the experience. So I think it is complicated, and we should have an adult discussion, which we're not going to have in the next 3 minutes, but just for lack of time.
I mean,
but we should not be yelling at each other.
I don't disagree with you. I think that some women may choose it and may enjoy it. I think for the most part, that's not the case. But yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily think we're ever going to totally get rid of prostitution either. But what we're trying to do is create legislation that can hold exploitative, abusive men to account and curb demand, because the demand is what leads to forcing women into prostitution. I mean, the demand is the problem. It's never going to go away. Women who are choosing it out of free choice, who really like it, are always going to be able to find clients. But we do want to help women who are in prostitution for lack of choice out of
and
prostitution
maybe,
and prevent
right.
men from exploiting them.
My daughter was working with women, young women in India, and she was critical of the sort of sexist culture in that part of India. And I said, I know the women are victims, but I think also the men are victims, because they also get shoehorned into a culture. And if they have feelings that don't fit into that, they just have to suppress them. I mean, I think our society doesn't allow men or women to express themselves sexually as well as it should. And I think that leads to a lot of dysfunction, such as men going to prostitutes and women ending up in prostitution.
Well, yeah, I mean, when I talk about these gender roles, these social roles, that's what I'm talking about, right? I mean, men are socialized to not have emotions and to treat women as objects and to be aggressive and to sort of, you know, separate their bodies from sex. And, you know, I mean, I think we're all kind of being pressured to see sex in this way nowadays. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, somehow your body and your mind are separate things, and the person that you're having sex with, you don't have to have any kind of relationship with or respect for or feelings towards. And I'm not saying you should only have sex with people that you love, God. I'm just saying, you know, there's humanity involved, and of course there's feelings involved. And I don't know why we're trying to force people to see sex in this kind of robotic, inhumane way.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, we've come to the end of our time, so I'd like to give you one chance to address one more thing that we didn't get to in this wide-ranging discussion.
Sure.
Is there one more thing you'd like to address?
Oh,
before
got
we...
it. Sorry, I thought you meant you.
Yes.
We're both just silent.
Yes, that's okay.
I mean, I guess I just want to say that, you know, what I'm trying to do is have a conversation. You know,
yes.
I don't want anybody to be discriminated against. I don't want anyone to be hurt. I have legitimate concerns, and many feminists have legitimate concerns about how transgender legislation or gender identity legislation and transgender ideology are going to impact women and women's rights. And we want to talk about this, and there's been no debate in Canada. They're passing these laws and legislation without having a real public debate. And anyone who does try to ask these questions and have a debate is smeared and threatened and no platform, and the media refuses to speak with them or, you know, acknowledge their existence. You know, the fact that I've been banned from Twitter permanently just for asking these innocuous questions is a sign of this. You know, we can't talk about it. And for better or for worse, Twitter is our modern public square. People can pretend like, oh, well, they're a private business. They're allowed to, you know, do whatever they want. But everyone knows this is where we're having conversations for the most part online.
Well, and to me, they're like a restaurant. Like, it used to be that if you were a restaurant, you could refuse service to Blacks or Indians or Jews or whoever you didn't want to serve. Now we say if you're a public restaurant, you give service to everybody who walks in the door, assuming they follow your rules for dress and behavior. But we're allowing these private companies and saying, well, you know, free speech rights don't apply for a private company, but they're providing a public service.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, we also can't allow a multi-billion-dollar company to dictate free speech. Like, that's a really bad thing for the left to be supporting, and yet they're right. supporting it.
Well, it started with, like, Alex Jones, and I thought, well, you know, not everything he says is wrong, and they banned everything. And secondly, I know if they go after Alex Jones, then next they're going to go after other people, and I was right. You know, they're throwing their weight around. For a lot of people who don't have hateful ideologies and don't deny that mass shootings happened and all that kind of crazy stuff that Alex Jones has done.
Well, no, and we can't say some people get free speech and others don't, and the people that get free speech are the people that we agree with. That's not what free speech is.
Yeah. Well, I think we could probably talk for another hour, but we don't have another hour. So I would just like to thank you for joining me today, Megan. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on, and thank you so much for addressing this issue and talking to me about this issue. I really just always appreciate being able to talk about it and being treated fairly, and I appreciate those who are courageous enough to have the conversation and cover the issues.
Yes, well, I'll let you know what happens to my Twitter feed
after this. Yeah. Good luck.
Okay, goodbye then.
Thanks, take care, bye-bye.
I had read several articles by the transgender woman, Florence Ashley, who has gone as far as physically changing her genitalia to conform with her desire to be a woman. I contacted her on Facebook before talking to Megan Murphy and continued the written conversation on Facebook afterwards. Here it is. I'd be interested in interviewing you based on a December 2017 article I read on Medium. I'm interested in the tension between feminists, sometimes called TERFs, and transgender activists. Also the difference between gender and sex. I'm interested in your experience with both an emotional and physical transition to being a woman. My radio show is infectiousmyth.podbean.com. Florence replied, "No thanks, I'd rather not participate in a platform that's repeatedly promoted HIV/AIDS denialism." I replied, "Well, you're welcome to challenge me on that if you want." Florence, "Nah." Me again. I asked Megan Murphy for an interview and she jumped to the chance. I'd like to get the other side. I've read a lot by trans people, but I haven't seen any of them involved in a discussion. Why not take advantage of the ability to put your views forwards and contradict what Megan said? Her interview will be up Tuesday. Florence. Unsurprising, she's trash and will jump at any opportunity to spread hatred. I'm more eclectic about where I appear because I'm an academic, not a proselytizer. Me again. She came across as calm, rational, and thoughtful, despite the fact that I personally didn't agree with everything she said. And I'm sure you could do the same. One of the points she raised was that some trans women who haven't transitioned physically are still attracted to women. Sometimes they refer to themselves as lesbians, which means that a person with a penis who is attracted to women may be in a woman-only space, such as a woman's shelter, a female prison, a change room, etc. Don't you think that is a genuine concern for cis women? And no, I'm not implying that you are like this, but such trans women do exist. Florence. Anti-vaxxers and Nazis also come across as calm, rational, and thoughtful to the uninitiated. That's precisely the problem with giving them a platform to propagandize. If anything, I find it mildly insulting to be invited to debate her, as much as I presume would be a medical doctor specializing in vaccines being invited to debate an anti-vaxxer. Me again. Why do you use the pejorative anti-vaxxer? Do you believe that every last vaccine promoted by every drug company is safe, effective, and necessary? Or could it be that some aren't? And how do you explain the $4 billion that the U.S. government has paid out for vaccine damage since the 1980s? Have you studied vaccines, studied AIDS, or do you just have faith in science? Florence, oh God, you are hilarious. Darling, 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 few things could be a greater indictment of Megan Murphy than appearing on your show. Me, refusal to discuss for an academic seems like an indictment. I've interviewed aluminum experts, Drs. Chris Shaw, UBC, and Chris Exley, University of Kiel. They have serious concerns about the amount and type of aluminum in the HPV vaccine. Do you consider them anti-vaxxers? Do you know enough about aluminum toxicity to dismiss their concerns? Or do you consider them legitimate, scientific vaccine critics? I guess I could also throw in the famous Peter Gotchi, head of the Nordic Cochrane Institute, the premier evidence-based medicine organization. He has concerns about HPV vaccination as well. In your judgment, is he an anti-vaxxer? I could list many more scientists and MDs who are vaccine critics if you want. Florence, you're annoying. Go away. And then, you mean the Chris Shaw who had to retract his paper because he couldn't follow basic scientific norms meant to ensure validity? I replied, yes, he had a paper retracted. Does that invalidate his entire career? And what about Exley and Gottschy? Can you engage substantively, or are you just looking for a reason to avoid evaluating their evidence? Florence, my point is that your appeal to their scientific authority is tainted. If that's too subtle, let me put it another way. Your whole enterprise and radio show is low-hanging pseudoscientific babble that cherry-picks data and scholars in order to promote dangerously anti-scientific theories akin to climate change denialism. Any academic worth their salt who knows anything about your work would refuse to contribute. Well, isn't it awkward that I have a long lineup of PhDs and MDs who have criticized vaccines? Your faith in vaccines is just that. Faith, which should be a dirty word in science. But we're getting off topic. You are entitled to have faith in allopathic medicine, and I didn't want to interview you about vaccines anyway. I wanted to interview you about your area of passion and expertise. I guess my big question is whether you support trans women, still sexually attracted to cis women, still with intact penises, being in women-only spaces. And then, silence. If Florence does answer that question, I will get back to you. Just for fun, I went through my first 100 episodes of The Infectious Myth to see what kind of people I had had on the show, people with academic credentials. It started with Charles Geschechter, professor of African history, Peter Gottschy, statistics and medicine, David Raznick, chemistry, drug development and cancer, Suzanne Humphreys, MD, Curtis Hagen, politics, Rodney Richards, HIV testing, Madhav Kandikar, climate science, Harold Hillman, electron microscopy, David Healy, psychiatric drugs, Henry Bauer, chemistry, history, and philosophy of science, John Tierman, history, Woodrow Monti, food science, John Hardy, dentistry and infection control, Tony Bark, MD, Patricia Goodson, kinesiology, Klaus Krenlein, MD, Christian Fiala, MD, gynecology, Terry Wall, MD, Eric Turner, medical clinical trials, Paul Connett, chemistry and fluoridation, Deborah Turkheimer, law professor, Garth Nicholson, medical science, Sherry Tenpenny, MD, Jane Donegan, MD, Byron Martin, physics, James Dashuk, kinesiology and indigenous history, Alice Drager, medical humanities and bioethics, Remington Nevin, medicine and fluoroquinolines, Adam Lankford, sociology and guns, Chris Exley, aluminum, Alan Cassells, pharmaceutical drug policy, Stefan Lanka, virology, Babette Babich, philosophy, Heather Ellis Kukulo, law professor and defense lawyer. And that's just the first 100 episodes. Thank you for listening to episode 202 of The Infectious Myth. If you have a comment, question, or suggestion for a future guest, please email me at david.crow@theinfectiousmyth.com. Like us at facebook.com/theinfectiousmyth. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at InfectiousMyth. Commit to monthly donations of any amount at patreon.com/InfectiousMyth. Until next week, thank you and goodbye.